Thanks for downloading this first episode of the Agenda podcast, Beyond the Bottom Line, brought to you by Auxera Consulting. Now, over the course of this series, we will be exploring how people's expectations from business are rapidly evolving. And if they haven't already, this is something businesses need to understand pretty quickly, as beyond providing returns to shareholders, they play a critical systemic role in the development of society. As you would expect, Auxera believes that economics has a vital part to play in establishing this new approach, and that success will only come if we discuss and debate every aspect. And that's exactly why we've launched this new podcast. My name is Russell Goldsmith, and joining me at Auxera's Central London offices to set the scene for the series ahead are two Auxera partners, Luis Carrera da Silva, who is also a board member here, and Dave Jevons, who is head of Auxera's digital focus. Alongside Luis and Dave, we also have Katie Lee English, a senior consultant in focusing on public policy issues. And finally, Tim Hogg, who is a senior consultant in the financial services and behavioural economics team. So welcome to all of you. Plenty of experience and knowledge around the table. Luis, let's come to you first. What's the key issue and why now?
Businesses have been put under severe pressure over the last few years, not just focusing on profits, but also in terms of the outcomes they deliver for society. The way they interact with communities, the way they interact with the environment, the way they interact with employees, it's got a lot of impact. And therefore, there's a growing pressure for companies to think not just the way they work hard for their owners. It's the way they work hard for their employees, the way they provide for the maintenance of the natural capital in society, the way they look after communities, people they, through their activities, they touch upon their day-to-day lives. So what we see today is across all of sectors around the globe, investors, governments, regulators, all exercising enormous pressure on boards of directors of companies to really have taken a much more holistic picture around the purpose of companies. So the purpose is not just profit, the purpose is a variety of other things that touch society as a whole.
Sure. Well, I'm sure we'll come on to sort of more detail in that. Katie, any thoughts from yourself on that?
So I guess one reflection is that whilst this is a new way of businesses approaching their decision making, the actual process itself isn't new. This is a way of thinking that governments routinely adopt. So for example, in the transport sector, most transport investments are unlikely to wash their face on a pure financial basis, but governments will take account of the safety benefits that they bring, will take account of the time savings, they will take account of the environmental benefits. So there's a lot that businesses can perhaps adopt from elsewhere.
Dave, what would you say are the main forces driving this change?
I think we've seen a variety of quite big scandals over the last sort of 5-10 years, corporate scandals where, as Luis was saying, the outcomes which have been delivered by firms when those have been exposed, consumers and wider society have judged them very harshly on that. If we look at things, starting perhaps with things like Enron, going through to Cambridge Analytica, what happened there, and consumers and society there's a sense that they're not happy with the pure shareholder model, and they feel that in some instances that doesn't deliver good, well-rounded outcomes for society.
Tim, what's your thoughts?
Just to add another scandal to the mix, the PPI scandal, which I think we're all aware of because of the Arnold Schwarzenegger head in the FCA adverts, has been adding another reason for firms not to be trusted so much by consumers.
Just another thought really to add as well. Businesses are still facing perfectly rational consumers. What's changing is the factors that are being considered by consumers. They're now not thinking, what is the price I'm paying and what is the quality of the product? They're thinking, what is this business delivering more widely? What is it delivering for the community? So it's not inconsistent with that basic core economic assumption that consumers are rational.
And I think that point about community is really important, because what we're seeing is a pushback over the last decade against globalization. And it's against globalization because many people feel that businesses aren't delivering for their own community. they don't see the benefits of businesses for the community where they are, whether it's because the firm is employing people in another place or because it is delivering benefits to people in another place. So I think how you define community is really important.
And I don't think this is just a UK or European perspective. The Singapore government have adopted a new economic framework, and in that, one of the key risks identified is an anti-globalisation rhetoric. So this is something we're seeing across the globe.
Luis, I can see you wanting to add something there.
I was just thinking about the power of social media in this context. So listening to my colleagues, and you just think about the way communities through, they don't need to be together physically. Is the power of social media, the way communities then understand what companies are delivering for society, and if they're not delivering the right sort of things, if they are aware that the employee rights are not being respected in a particular company, or that a particular company is particularly good at something, that social media will just disseminate the information so quickly, instantaneously leads to a reaction by society. And you know, it's what is different today from what it was different 10 years ago. We all know that companies need to deliver on a variety of outcomes. But the way today is so powerful when some of these scandals, some of these things that happen, or some of the companies that do things really well, it is so quickly understood in society. So the power of social media is phenomenal.
Interesting. So, Dave, I want to pick up on something you mentioned just a little bit earlier in terms of shareholders, you know, because I was wondering, are there different perspectives that need to be considered in addressing all this?
So the traditional corporate model was the shareholder model, and the idea was that the shareholders incentivized the firm to make profits, and then the shareholders chose what to do with those profits, whether to spend them, whether to give them to charity, to get involved in all sorts of activities. I think increasingly over time, we've realised that the firm needs to respond to more than just one stakeholder, more than just the owners of financial capital, but the owners of the other capitals which the firm uses in producing their outputs. And there's a framework for this, which is the five capitals framework. And in that, as the name suggests, financial capital is only one of them. You've also got natural capital, which is around the environment, physical capital, the infrastructure that we use, social capital, which is the trust and the relationships that Tim talked about earlier, and human capital, which is the workforce and the people who contribute to making the outputs that firms produce.
Tim, any thoughts on you from this side of things?
Yeah, so coming at this from the perspective of behavioural economics, we can think about the importance of relationships here. So the relationships between different types of capital and between people, the stakeholders, representing the different types of capital. So you might have employees and managers, you could have customers, you could have those representing the environment as well. And if you think about the firm as a way of facilitating relationships with a group of people to cooperate and deliver excellent outcomes, you can also think about the relationship between that firm and those other forms of capital and the responsibility that being part of that relationship places on the firm. The so what to this is that you can end up thinking about the firm's responsibilities in a slightly different way. You can end up with maybe a more rounded picture of what a firm is there to do.
It's a great idea, isn't it, that the firm should be looking at all these things. But if you think about where some firms are now and the history of how long they've been told to maximise shareholder value, it's such a big change for them to go from just maximising shareholder value to making some of these trade-offs between these different capitals. So in each, they're borrowing from all of the capitals and aiming to return from them. So instead of just measuring returns to financial capital, suddenly they're going to have to do returns to four other capitals as well.
Well, I was just going to say that you might think that this is for companies. Some choose, some do not choose to go down this five capitals model or think about these various dimensions. But if you actually observe what is going on in some of the countries in the way that the corporate governance codes are requiring boards of directors to actually consider what is the purpose of the corporation, what is the way the purpose actually is looking after the interests of the employees, the interests of the environment, the interests of communities. It's requiring boards of directors to define that purpose, to embed that in the strategies of firms, to create monitoring bodies for seeing how are the companies achieving those objectives. And the latest one is actually the way they think about managers, executives, being remunerated on the basis not just on shareholder value, but all these dimensions of capital. So you've got that in France, you've got that in the UK. In Italy, there's pressure for the Corporate Governance Code to change in that direction. So it's really kind of, it's really taking momentum.
Luis, can I just ask a question? Are we talking here about corporate social responsibility? Or are we talking about something else?
Yes, it's a very good question because it's almost like a sense of déjà vu. I've been here before, and I think this is very different. Actually, I think, you know, I'm always reminded that before the financial crisis, Lehman Brothers had more than 70 pages. A corporate social responsibility report, which looked incredibly pleasing on the eye, and then the financial crisis happened, and we all know what it meant. But I think this is different. This is not about a firm saying, "Are there all these things that we're doing?" This is about a firm thinking about how it is changing their behaviors deep down the organization, how managers, how employees are thinking about these dimensions of capital, and then engaging with outside stakeholders around how they are achieving those outcomes. So it's very different. But I do take your point. There is a risk here that if this is not done, it's not taken seriously, that we end up with another sort of marketing kind of distraction rather than actually making this a real source of strength and change in outcomes in society.
But what I was going to ask is, because you make it sound quite straightforward, so why isn't this happening across all industries? Why aren't more businesses doing this at the moment?
It's really tough, right? We've spent hundreds of years incentivizing firms to make profits and return them to shareholders. And now we're asking them to make these complicated trade-offs. It's going to take time for them to be able to handle that. It's going to require representation on their boards, maybe like the co-determination system they have in Germany that puts employee representatives on the boards of medium to large-sized businesses.
Yeah, I, as Dave said, it's really hard. And any student of economics or finance will have been taught from day one, your objective as a business is to maximize shareholder value. Now, I would argue that it's just a matter of time. The short term maximization of profit is what is largely pursued at the moment. But what we're saying, I think, is that over the medium to long term perspective, actually following something more akin to a five capital model is going to support your financial capital. Like, that is what is a sustainable business model is going to be built on. So the two concepts aren't contradictory, they're complementary, but I don't think necessarily that the wider business community has really thought about that yet.
Tim?
Another reason why it might be somewhat difficult in some situations is because of competition. Now, I'm an economist, I love competition, I think competition is great. But you can end up in some markets where it's really fiercely competitive, where firms end up being competed into a position where they find it difficult to then change out of. So if you think of some insurance markets in Europe, it's so competitive, it's not like there's excessive profitability. But you end up with certain pricing practices which can lead to consumers feeling that they've been treated unfairly. And so the solution here is to think about how competition can get us out of that as well as into it.
You've also got trust issues in financial services as well, though, haven't you?
Yeah, so going back to Lehman Brothers and the financial crisis, I think the last decade has been a bit of a watershed moment in how people trust their banks. I think the traditional image of a bank manager sitting in the local branch has been somewhat blown away. Particularly with the financial crisis, people in general, I think, feel that the distribution of impacts were not entirely aligned with the distribution of responsibility for causing the financial crisis.
And Dave, obviously, with your focus on the digital sector, I mean, there's trust issues there as well, certainly with data, you know, in particular.
Yeah, definitely. It's a massive issue. And I hope that the platforms and the digital economy are starting to learn from the lessons from markets like financial services and energy as well, a market that had a lot of issues with trust between consumers and firms, to get the balance right between offering a service that's useful to people and free, but not abusing the trust about what consumers expect to be happening. And this is what went wrong in the Cambridge Analytica scandal, when people had not expected their data to be used in that way. And they then felt personally affected by this. And we all saw the backlash that they felt from that. And speaking to people in that industry, you feel that they are learning those lessons very quickly about we need to explain to people what is being used and how it's being used. We recently did a piece for the consumer organisation Which, looked at how people expected their data to be used. And people do understand that their data is going to be used, but they want to be communicated as to how.
That's really interesting, Dave. That is very similar to another thing we're seeing in financial services, which is the phenomenon of fintech taking off, where some customers are really trusting with their data and giving these new firms wholesale access to loads and loads of their data, whereas other customers are slightly more restrictive and not allowing it through. And so we're seeing a real divergence in how much people trust their financial services providers.
Katie?
So there's so much experience from our clients, and we see a whole spectrum of approaches. So we've got a really fantastic example. One of our clients, a large law firm, we're working with at the moment on a project looking at the gender pay gap. And this is interesting for a number of reasons, primarily because although they recognise that looking at the causes of the gender pay gap and the best ways to measure it and to reduce it over time is kind of intrinsically a good thing, they actually believe that it's commercially a sensible thing to do as well. They know it's not going to have a short-term payback, but they think that their clients expect it of them. They think that by being able to say to their clients, you know, this is something we're taking seriously, we're going much further than the legislation because we think this is the right thing to do. They think that that is what their clients want to hear, and that ultimately that will support their bottom line.
Right. Luis, at the top of the show, we talked about Auxerra believing that economics plays a vital role in establishing this new approach. Obviously, Dave touched on the five forms of capital a bit earlier, but can you go into a bit more detail about how exactly economics fits in?
At the very heart of it is how you measure impact of behavior by consumers, behavior by firms, interacting in the marketplace, having impact on different things, impact on returns. Returns, as Dave was saying earlier, returns, you can express them in financial returns. So you can see how we measure the financial returns. We're starting to see how we measure returns to capital in other forms of capital, returns to social capital, returns to natural capital, to human capital. So people do not talk a lot about how it is so important to invest in the human capital of an organization so that in the long run, that organization, that company, is actually going to be able to stay at the forefront of its market through having the labor market in delivering its objectives. So the way economics is used is by providing objectivity in these discussions. Earlier, Tim was talking about corporate social responsibility. What I'm talking about here is actually how do we bring evidence, how do we bring an analysis that actually allows us to monitor, to allows us to see that we're progressing in the right direction in terms of outcomes on these various forms of capital. Economics provides the methodologies, provides the frameworks for us to bring that objectivity into those discussions, rather than staying at a sort of an interesting discussion we're having.
Sure.
Actually, this can be measured.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously have a European perspective on it. Do you see the challenges differ across Europe at all?
I think the concepts are the same, but you see the the trade-offs which firms are expected to make being about the consumers that they have in their location. So when I look at the digital space, for example, we see different trade-offs being made in Germany, where there's a lot more concern about privacy, than in the UK, where the concerns are different, for example.
Okay. Let's see, I was wondering maybe if you can share some examples where things are working. So I thought maybe if we could come to each of you and maybe, you can give us an example. So Tim, let's start with you from your, sector's perspective.
So we've seen a lot of really great advances being made in financial services in Europe, where firms are really focusing on how they treat customers in particular. And this is going beyond just making sure that you've got a sustainable customer base and that you're profitable in the long run. This is really thinking about your customer needs and whether you're meeting them. And we're seeing a lot of firms really take responsibility for that, really think it through, and then deliver really excellent outcomes through good communication, so behavioral economics again, good pricing practices, and really designing the product around the customer. And we're seeing regulators across Europe, like the European Banking Authority, really kind of focusing on that. Are you meeting your customer needs?
Okay. Katie, how about yourself?
So the example I was thinking about is with one of our clients, and Tim mentioned earlier about competition being a challenge in thinking about some of these problems. Now, one of our clients is so keen on thinking about improving the environment that they've asked us to consider what their options might be, regardless of competition law, because they are willing to think about approaching government about changes to things that they'd otherwise assumed were static, because they are so serious about it.
And Dave, how about yourself?
You asked earlier about what were some of the challenges. And I think one of the challenges that I see in some of my clients is different parts of of large organisations. I struggle to make these trade-offs between these different forms of capital and the different requirements that society is asking. What I've seen work really well that unlocks this is, as Luis was saying earlier, that when a firm has a clear corporate purpose that can bring together those different parts of an organisation, and it really unlocks conversations about what the purpose of a firm should be.
Just to dive in there, we were talking recently to someone who's on the board of a European financial institution, and they said they'd really come to realise that the purpose was important for attracting millennials to come and work at their firm.
Well, this leads nicely on to my next question, actually, because I was going to ask you, what's the purpose of a corporation, or what is a business, or we could even say business in general? What's it all for? Luis, let's come to you.
Well, nothing like talking about your own company to actually demonstrate.
You are more than welcome to.
That we mean what we say. We actually, 4 or 5 years ago, we tried to articulate what is our purpose. And our purpose is to use economics to make the impact on our clients, on society, on our staff, make impact, deliver positive impact in society. That's the purpose that we have as an organization. And we, in the ways we work, the way we do research, the way we interact with clients, the way we interact with our staff, all of us aim to meet that purpose, to achieve, to conduct ourselves in a way that maximizes the outcomes that are associated with that purpose. So that doesn't mean that for an organization that is different in the water sector or in the banking sector, the purpose might not be slightly different. But there's one key component that is common across all of them, is that every single company will touch upon not just shareholders, their owners. It will have impact on a broader set of stakeholders in society, and therefore will need to be thinking about how to deliver outcomes that improve their situation, their affordability, or the environment in which they evolve, all of those things. The company is really quite a crucial role in society that it plays, and is a huge opportunity for it to deliver such value in a wider sense, rather than just value in the financial sense.
Okay. Any other contribution? Katie?
Well, just reflecting on what Luis is saying, what really stands out is we talk about businesses, we talk about shareholders, we talk about staff. I think we always have to remember these are all people. Firms are made up of people. Our clients are people. Our shareholders are people. The community are just made up of people. And so when we're thinking about the purpose of a business, I think we have to remember that we're looking at welfare. We're looking at the welfare of all those people. And we think about it in different perspectives. We think about the shareholder welfare, the staff pay. We think about the community. But I think it's helpful just to remember all of those institutions are, at the end of the day, just people.
Tim, you're nodding away there.
Yeah, I just echo that exactly. And, you know, it is about a responsibility to a broader set of stakeholders than we might have traditionally considered. Now, as an economist, I feel like we should be somewhat humble here because economists have led to a lot of the situation where we are at with a particular focus on one stakeholder. I think part of what we're doing now as a profession is really rethinking whether we've got it right. But yeah.
This has been a great series opener, let's call it, and hopefully we'll pave the way for some more in-depth discussion across all the points we have covered, and I'm sure that there'll be more to come over the next few months. Before we finish, I just want to ask each of you for one quick takeaway to for our listeners to act on. So I'm going to go around the table here. Katie, I'm coming to you first on this one.
So I don't know about something to act on, but I think certainly a reflection is that this is a trend. I hope that it is a trend that never goes away. It's to the benefit of everybody. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing where we end up.
Dave?
Know and share the purpose of your organisation.
Very simple. Tim?
This is more than just corporate social responsibility.
And Luis, you get the last word.
You get the last word. I think the key is that investors, the owners of companies, really believe this is a trend here to stay.
Perfect. Luis Correa da Silva, Dave Jevons, Katie Lee English and Tim Hogg, thank you all for joining me to kick off this podcast series. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this topic. So if you'd like to contribute to the discussion, you can do that on the Agenda Hub, which is on the Auxera website, or you can comment on their LinkedIn and Twitter feeds where they'll be posting this podcast. We'd also love for you to subscribe to the show, which you can do on all podcast platforms such as iTunes, Spotify, or any of your favorite podcast apps. And if you have enjoyed listening, then please do give us a positive rating and review. Finally, if you would like to get in touch with Auxera about the Agenda campaign or any of the people who have joined the conversation today, then you can do that via the email address, which is agenda@auxera.com. But for now, thanks for listening and goodbye.